Penguin Random House Audio presents Trailblazer, The Power of Business as the Greatest Platform for Change, by Mark Benioff and Monica Langley. Read for you by Ray Porter. Prologue. This book's genesis took place in the summer of 1996 on a beautiful blue sky morning in San Francisco. The view of the bay from the window of my apartment would have been breathtaking to behold, but I didn't care. I was lying in bed lacking the will or the energy to get up. I had the greatest job I could ever have imagined at Oracle, one of the fastest-growing software companies in the world. Fresh out of college, with a shaggy mane of hair and wacky collection of Hawaiian shirts, I had somehow caught the attention of the company's visionary founder, Larry Ellison. Within 4 years, I had been promoted to vice president, the youngest person ever in that position. Soon I had the multi-million-dollar salary, stock, and perks to go with it. Yet there I was, on a workday morning, frozen in place under the covers in my apartment on Telegraph Hill. I did not feel happy or fulfilled. I was supposedly living the American dream, but I was lost. Later that day, I managed to drag myself to the office where I found Larry and told him about the malaise that had sunk in. His proposed solution was easy and direct. "Why don't you take a sabbatical? Take 3 months off, go take a look around," he added, "and pull yourself back together." To be honest, I didn't really know what the word sabbatical meant, but Larry was my mentor and I trusted his advice. Later that day, I called my friend Argan Gupta to tell him what I was going through. He had just quit his job to start a new company, and he suggested we travel to Nepal and India together. I thought the trip sounded like a good diversion. I had no idea it would change the course of my life. I eventually found myself in the city of Trivandrum in southern India, near the backwaters of the Arabian Sea. We'd made our way there for one reason. A few years earlier, I'd briefly met Amma, meaning mother, Mata Amritanandamayi, a remarkably warm and wise woman known as the Hugging Saint, who had offered spiritual guidance and comfort to untold thousands of followers. Secretly, I hoped that her wisdom and well-known healing embrace would help me find myself again. With a chorus of Hindu chants and clouds of incense wafting over us, Argan and I told her about business goals and how, we suspected, they were in some way connected to the existential confusion we both felt. Then Amma looked at us with her compassion and intensity and said, "In your quest to succeed and make money, don't forget to do something for others." With these words, the idea for Salesforce began to take shape. I knew in my head that I wanted to build a company that harnessed innovative new technology, but in my heart, I also wanted it to be committed to giving back. On that day in Trivandrum, the seed was planted. 2 years later, I left the Oracle Nest to do just that. When we signed the Salesforce incorporation papers in 1999, we wanted to make sure the notion of giving back was deeply ingrained in the fabric of its company culture. Of course, I hoped Salesforce would prosper by traditional measures, but I was equally determined that it would have a positive impact on the world. So, from the outset, we decided to identify the values that would serve as our bedrock. At first, they were trust, customer success, and innovation. Later, we added a fourth, equality. We also decided that no matter how big the company grew, we would always set aside 1% of our equity, product, and employee time for charitable causes, an initiative we call the 111 philanthropic model. Salesforce, if you're not familiar with us, pioneered the use of cloud computing as a way to provide essential customer relationship management, or CRM software, to organizations of all sizes. As one of the first companies of our kind to allow our customers to download our products online and store their data securely in the cloud, we created a new business model that made smarter, more intuitive technology tools for large and small businesses accessible through subscriptions rather than onerous long-term contracts. A few short years ago, I believed the chief reason Salesforce's market valuation had risen from $1 billion to more than $120 billion since we went public in 2004 was that we had done a commendable job of running the business. But I now know the most powerful engine of our success hasn't been our software, our people, or our business model, but rather the decision we made in 1999 to orient our culture around values. This isn't just my opinion. There's a growing pile of evidence that markets reward businesses that do good, and that companies that have a social mission tend to be more successful. In a competitive business such as tech, where luring top talent can be the difference between profit and loss, it's often something intangible, like a diverse, inclusive, values-driven culture that determines where the best and brightest talent decide to work. In the last few complicated, uncertain years, through a mix of confusion, exhaustion, and exhilaration, I've come to appreciate how our values truly define who we are as a company. They're not some decorative spire perched atop our headquarters office tower in San Francisco. They're part of the concrete and steel rebar in the basement. Time and again, they are what has kept the whole structure from keeling over. I wrote this book to share all that I've learned on my journey, taking Salesforce from a poorly funded startup operating next door to my old San Francisco apartment to one of the fastest growing technology companies that also ranks high on annual lists of the most admired businesses and best places to work. But this book isn't only about my journey or about Salesforce. It's about how to create a culture where doing well is synonymous with doing good in order to thrive in a world where a company is only as strong as the principles it adopts. I don't pretend to have all the answers, but my hope is that whatever business you're in, this book will inspire you to bring your values to work. Part 1. Values Create Value. A New Direction. Packed into the giant auditorium, in every seat and lining the walls, was a veritable army of global influence. Leading politicians, executives, bureaucrats, academics, journalists, and policy experts. On either side of me sat my four fellow panelists, an esteemed group of technology CEOs and thought leaders. Behind us, the title of the keynote panel that was about to commence flashed on the screen in giant, intimidating type. It wasn't a title, really, more like a loaded question. In technology we trust? As we sipped water and smoothed the creases in our jackets, our moderator, the business journalist Andrew Ross Sorkin, kicked things off by declaring that the public's eroding confidence in the judgment of technology companies was the most pivotal and important discussion that's taking place right now, really in industry anywhere. He was right. In early 2018, the tech industry was experiencing an acute crisis of trust. Recent revelations of alarming privacy breaches at Facebook and even possible Russian-backed voter manipulation in the 2016 presidential election were not sitting well with a large portion of the American public. The burning question on many of the minds gathered here at the annual World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, was a deceptively simple one. What are we going to do about it? Technology is a field to which I have devoted my entire career. I've often marveled at how today's advances in computing have transformed the way we live and work. During the last decade, the start of a period often referred to as the Fourth Industrial Revolution, we saw
extraordinary advancements in artificial intelligence, quantum computing, genetic
Sample complete. Ready to continue?